Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, everyone. It's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola, and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe period Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.
Hey guys, Alex here, recording from a temporary mic in a hotel room. A lot of you already know there's been a bit of a problem, and I thought I'd explain it. So in the following explanation, whenever I say the word goblins, you need to think the word asbestos. So, once upon a time it was a normal, fantastic day at Rusty Towers, making podcasts and getting ready to launch the Magnus Archives. Suddenly there was a repairman at the door. He came in and with little ado started digging in the wall. Unfortunately, he exposed a goblin lair and released them to run around all of Rusty Towers. Fortunately, everyone apart from Alex was out adventuring at the time, but unfortunately the goblins did run around the whole building licking things. Without the London Rangers crew, Alex had to flee, even though he sleeps at Rusty Towers and all his things are now covered in goblin spit. Alex found Bertie's lawyers and they've put him in La Rochelle whilst they hire some mercenaries to kill the goblins, but unfortunately the only way to kill goblins is with fire, and anything covered in goblin spit also needs to be burned. So, because Alex needs to fix Rusty Towers, he couldn't actually edit a whole normal episode that week. Thankfully, he found he had a backup metacast recorded a long time ago that he had saved just in case Rusty Towers was attacked by goblins that weren't Alex's fault, and is using that this week. So, yeah. Sorry everyone who was hoping for a normal episode this week. We should be back to normal very soon, but unfortunately the Magnus Archives might be delayed a bit. We're still looking at that. So thanks anyway for your patience, and we really hope you enjoy today's episode.
Welcome to a Rusty Quill Gaming Metacast! Finally! Yay!
We've killed and eaten James, so he's not here.
But I have gained his power of volume! We all have!
That's the dog!
Lydia ate Brutal.
I'm sorry, Brutal!
It was necessary. But yep, today's episode is effectively How to Rogue.
Yeah, because as you might have been able to tell, I struggled with that a bit. Yeah, another side fun thing is how to do voices, because as you can tell, Sasha is at the extreme end of my realistic voice. It's not something that I put on it's sometimes quite hard to keep it separate. But now I am posh.
Now imagine what it's like doing all of the voices and everyone's London based, and I have one Cockney accent, which is the cool, blimey, governor, and that's all I've got. So it's not great. Anyway,
I say you've done quite well.
Yeah,
with slight variations as well.
Thank you, guys.
You have one voice, but you can variate it. Just so it's distinct.
I don't have to do the stupid squeaky voice in this episode. Instead, I'm going to be smooth jazz.
Yeah, we can, so basically,
you like chocolate in my ears.
Where is it?
Ben is just smooth jazz all the time.
Why? Thank you.
So, getting back on track, we're covering rogues today.
I thought we were just complimenting my voice.
Can you just be Greg? Because I miss Greg.
I could, but I feel like it'd get old fast.
It's
like,
so when doing sneak attacks, the thing you have to bear in mind is that ultimately there are a number of parameters that you have to hit.
When we maybe not.
I miss you, Greg.
Metacast.
So, back on track. So, yeah, rogues, principally when you get into the history of it, obviously it's an archetype. It's a very, very old fiction archetype, the idea of the rake. The rakish one.
It started as thieves and assassins, and then when did they switch to calling it rogue? Because they didn't want to, like, because a thief makes people think it's someone bad and evil,
so
they sort of switched to rogue to try and avoid that.
That's the fun thing about, you know, The Hobbit with the burglar.
Yeah.
You know,
well, in the original sort of first edition for Dungeons and Dragons, you had dwarf was a class and thief was a class.
Oh,
you're right,
well designed.
No one picked thief because everyone went, I don't want to be a bad guy, I want to be a good guy. Yeah. So they redesigned it. They reskinned it to rogue, and it's grown since then. And one of the core things which we're definitely going to dip into today is that rogues, it's always been this way. Rogues are big on the sneak attack. Although that's technically, we've been saying it wrong. I still say sneak attack. It's an old habit from 3.5. It's technically precision damage.
Right. It's sort of flank.
Sneak attack is the name of the ability, but what it grants you is precision damage.
And so we'll go into that.
Like vital organ damage, basically. Yeah,
sure. We'll go
which
into
is why
it,
certain things can be immune to it.
Yeah. Because of the nature of the game, a lot of things are specifically worded.
For instance.
And it's important that it counts as precision rather than just generic.
Right.
Yeah, like fungus. I think fungus is immune to
probably skeletons.
Damage.
Yeah, well, we found that.
A lot of things that used to be are now not, which is interesting. They changed that in Pathfinder because people complained the rogue was underpowered.
Yeah, they reduced the number of things within.
That is very
so strange. Heading through, we'll just work our way through the main list first and then onto the more obscure stuff. So, yeah, alignments. Doesn't have to be good, doesn't have to be evil, straightforward. I'll again say it's people who are GM.
Do we even have alignments?
We haven't really paid much attention.
So with alignments, I think they're a pretty limiting thing. Is that ultimately alignments can be useful, and if you've never RP'd before ever, it can be quite good to go, you are lawful good, and you know, but
interesting, I find that's worse.
But I think it tends to get people in bad habits very quickly.
That's why.
What I would say is that the game requires it for certain conditions. So what I've made a condition, it's in the rules and the house rules, if you look up on the website and so on, is that if you are wanting to play something that has an alignment specific deal,
like
that's,
a cleric.
Yeah, that's fine, unless I catch you messing around with it. So if Zolf decides to go against his god and spend loads and loads of time in the mountains being really, really nice to criminals who kill dolphins, then it's probably not okay.
Damn dolphin
bandits. Yeah, I'm not gonna rule it really specific, but the main reason for that is
riding dolphins through the snow.
Oh, that's a much better idea than what I had. Can we have dolphin bandits? Can we fight dolphin bandits?
Dolphin bandits, it's on the list. There's so many.
It's just a reskinned direwolf. It's a dolphin.
So
a dire dolphin.
Moving through, so the hit dice there, D8. Mm-hmm. Obviously,
it's pretty decent.
It's actually fairly solid. Once upon a time in the older versions, it tends to be a little less, and you tended to be even more squidgy.
Yeah.
But rogues are still considered kind of glass cannon.
I got literally no idea what that means.
So what that means is when we were selecting your hit points originally, we were rolling dice. In theory, roll dice. Again, another one of my house rules is that rather than you rolling dice and it being completely randomly allocated, what happens is you take 75% of every dice roll. The main reason for that is it helps with the game balancing, because as much as it encourages the randomization, the idea is it actually encourages player death so that you have shorter sessions and that you vary it up. Whereas, obviously, for something more long-running, that's the last thing you want. And also, it would be really, really awful to listen to if Bertie had, like, 6 hit points at level 6 and then everyone, you know, Sasha's kicking around with 5 times his hit points going, oh, yes, I'm a delicate little rogue who has to be quite sneaky. Also, I can take a punch better than a prize fighter. Like, it settles things
As I remember, basically, when they switched from D&D 3.5 to Pathfinder, almost every class got their hit die upgraded.
Yeah,
it was, I think that was where they changed it. Because they realised they didn't want to make characters who died really easily.
It's also an interesting, because it's just a holdover from D&D, really. Sure. I've not seen any other D20 system that really keeps it going. Stuff like 13th Age or anything. Any of the D&D kind of updates have really done away with it and just said, have your hit dice, don't be random.
Yeah, yeah. I can understand the randomization, and if I was playing just a standard weekly, oh, look, the campaign died, no worries, that's fine, but we're going for something a bit of different scale, so I had to...
Yeah. I always find that one of the difficult things about playing a rogue is that they're one of those classes, but then I kind of feel this way about every class, that wants every attribute. So I think we should talk about attributes quickly, because obviously dex, a lot of their skills are dex-based. Mm. You know, a lot, most rogue characters take dex-based attacks, as Sasha has, but you don't have to. You can just stick with strength-based attacks.
I'll tell you what, let's move our way through the class skills then and go into a bit of detail.
Okay.
So just to list them off first, we've got acrobatics, appraise, bluff, climb, craft, diplomacy, disable device, disguise, escape artist, intimidate, knowledge, dungeoneering, knowledge, local, linguistics, perception, perform, profession... Sense motive, sleight of hand, stealth, swim, use magic device. Now, each of those are keyed to a specific attribute, i.e., you know, strength, dex.
Constitution, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma.
That's the one.
Yeah.
And normally, I would tend to see rogue characters would expect to have a high dex.
Yep, yep.
And a high int to take advantage of those extra skills.
That tends to be the most common. Yeah.
By no means does that have to be the way. In fact, a lot of times you'll also get rogues with a high charisma.
Yep. Because
they can work well with the bluff.
Because they get all the social skills on their skill list. If they have a high charisma, they can really take advantage of that.
I think that's another reason why they changed the name from thief to rogue. Because thief is not a class, it's a profession.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas rogue is you do anything that's kind of a bit dodgy. So you can be a burglar, a thief,
you
could be a murderer or a bandit. You could be a con artist. You can, you know, that's what a rogue
shake
is.
It up. The thing with rogues as well is they get a lot of skill ranks per level. So in Pathfinder, you put 1 point in a rank and you automatically get a bonus 3 for it being the first one you spent. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you can put 1 rank in every time you level up to the maximum number of ranks you can have in a skill is your level. Mm-hmm. So at level 20, you will have, if you've maxed it out, 23 as a modifier, which is obviously huge. One of the things that people underestimate with rogues is the difference in skill ranks per level is huge. Mm-hmm. And I would say that in shorter campaigns, people have a point. I mean, you've engaged with this community a lot. A lot of people get down on the rogue saying their numbers are not up to scratch.
So I got a bit stressed when trying to learn more about how to play it and particularly thinking about leveling up. I went on the internet. Which always
not that
don't,
thing.
Don't advise.
Why
that.
Would you go there?
It's a silly place. there were a lot of people, like all of the first page Google hits were like, "Don't play a rogue; is underpowered. Why wouldn't you be like a necromantic alchemist exploder person or like
love those guys?
They're great.
An exploder person is a rank, or a you know like or an urban ranger or a vivisectionist alchemist." And they're like, oh, these are all better for that specific thing. But I don't particularly mind not being perfect.
There's some arguments, which is, and I get it, it depends on what kind of game you're playing. And in something that's really, really heavy combat, and there's not much else to it, and it's short, they have a point.
Yeah.
Which is that rogues excel in really specific conditions.
Yep.
I.e., you know, you're flanking, you've got the drop on them, in combat. And obviously, if you're playing lots of short ones, the chances of that situation arriving for you are actually quite slim.
Yeah.
I find with rogues that the longer the campaign runs, yes, everyone else gets these big, stupid, world-breaking things. But the flip side is, you are more frequently running into these scenarios where rogues play out quite well.
Yeah, like my favourite thing in the campaign so far has been like climbing up the side of a building, sneaking through a room, and then stabbing someone in the back in a confined space. And that's the sort of thing that only a rogue can do.
Yeah,
that was a hella good move.
Yeah, I mean, I had to use acrobatics, climb, stealth, and my favourite thing, stabbing.
Now that's leading into, here's the thing that I've encountered a lot, is that a lot of game masters don't really know what to do with rogues.
Yeah.
So it's things like with trap finding, we'll get into that a little bit later, they'll deliberately make the rogue run off on their own, and the rest of the group are just sat there killing time whilst one person does loads of trap searching.
Yeah.
Then the party moves on and fight happens and the rogue sits aside while the part. It doesn't work. Like the way you have to do it is you have to integrate all of those kind of skill checks in that kind of dynamic in the actual fighting as well as in the day-to-day stuff.
In my experience, the people on the internet want to build a character who is extremely good at one very specific thing.
Yeah.
And the type of character I enjoy playing, and I think makes a better game in the long run, is characters who can do a few things pretty well and some things badly. Yeah. Like, it creates good story and good fun moments when... Like, I love how awkward Sasha is. Like, but it doesn't stop her... talking.
Yeah, it doesn't have a trying.
Yeah, in a lot of gaming groups, you'd find that people would not let Sasha speak because they'd be like, "No, you're rubbish at it. Yeah. Stop." How is that a good game?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that I think what it exposes is something that's really, really important in not just Pathfinder but RPGs in general. And the rogue is kind of the biggest clue to this. Is a lot of people hear the word game and play RPG to win. And this is tied into, I mean, you get the Munchkin culture, the ideas of people who are, you know, pushing the numbers as hard as they can and forgetting about the story.
Not that that's a bad thing, if that is it's the kind of game that you want
to
play.
That's my point.
Absolutely. The worst thing is when you have two different types of players trying to play the same game.
And what I'd say is an issue is, even when you're trying to max out the figures, go for it, okay? But an RPG is not something that you play to win, in my experience, because there's no end conditions. Ultimately, I mean, peeking behind the curtains, who is it that determines whether you win or not? Ultimately, it's me. I mean, yes, the dice rolls are there and so on.
Or our listeners.
Aww. But honestly, you end up with the scenario where
I play some dice rolls with all these votes. you would crit everything.
True.
Yeah.
But I've run into lots of people who do that, who are like, "Oh, I beat you." It's like, well, I'm running the world. It's not. It's like, yeah, I showed you. And it's like, yeah, you're not really getting the point.
I rebalance on the fly. It's like, I could kill you right now because I can just make up some numbers and they kill you.
So, I mean, there's a few of us kind of come to this from having done improvising together and basically having an idea of producing story and producing games and producing scenarios that are entertaining to watch and engage with as basically the win condition. So rather than... And in improv... gagging out, like having the one thing that cracks a scene open, which could be, you know, equivalent to sort of, oh, I win this thing because I have three rules that stack and so break your monster. That is actually, that's a lose condition. Like that, because you've broken the fun, you've broken the production cycle that is making more and more story, is making more comedy, is making more entertainment.
An end point is a failure.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to keep going and keep building.
Yeah.
And the others are, so, I mean, Bent played a lot more and built a lot more kind of games that are, I think, less numbers-based.
I am a narrative person, which you can tell from my playing of the cleric. And like, some stuff.
Also, I'm missing a leg, which makes me awful.
Have you regretted that yet?
Mechanically, yes. Narratively, no.
Good.
No.
Good.
It's been excellent. I think it's one of the best choices again.
Clomp along two squares.
But, and all of the games that I'd played before, or the sort of role-playing, had been sort of narrative and story generating things where a lot of the time there isn't a single dice roll in the whole thing. It's just about being having a bunch of cards and laid out and you try and make a story from it. Yeah.
So keeping going with the list of the character progression.
Yep.
Oh, yes, just so we know.
So going through
rogues, but they are they are one of the storytelling things. Like, that's what I quite like about all of these numbers here. They look quite scary as a big list, but are actually, all of them are prods for different ways that you can manipulate the environment to do entertaining new things. Mm.
That's actually a good one. I'm distracting myself now. Environment's a big one with rogues. Mm. If you're playing with a game master who just, what you see is what you get, and treats it like a computer game, you're going to get in trouble with rogues quite quickly because they're not made with that in mind. They're really, really not. We'll get into it a little bit later, but when you go into things like rogue talents and things like that, they're specifically designed to engage with the environment and to engage with NPCs and stuff. And if you're playing it like it's a computer game and the only two people that you can talk to are Bob from the tavern and Bill who works in the hospital, great, but your skill is hunting down lots of different people and things like that, and it doesn't help you out. So running through quickly with the base attack progression, it's called, is standard, which means that at level 1, you have a 0 bonus. At level 2, you have a 1. Level 3, you have a 2, blah, blah, blah. All the way up to level 8. At level 8, you get your first second attack, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
That was a wonderful way of putting it. Well done.
So what it is everyone, with the exception of very few classes, starts getting multiple attacks to reflect the fact that they're faster, they're better, they can chain things. But your second attack is always at a -5 penalty by virtue of being the second attack that you're pulling off.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, once you get to level 15, you get a third attack. because that second attack is now at 6, so a minus 5 penalty you're bringing up into positive numbers. And then by 20, you've got a 15, a 10, and a 5. If you were to play into 21 and epic levels, which get a bit unbalanced, again, you're getting the minus 5 kicking in and you're getting those more attacks. What's interesting about Sasha is we deliberately gave you the two-weapon fighting feat route. Again, we'll go into that. I'm saying that a lot. We'll go into that in a little bit. I'm just trying to go through these things in an order. But the benefit of that is that you get in those second attacks earlier. And you
stabby.
Yeah, you get all of the extra attacks that everyone else will get, plus a whole load more, yeah, which is why you do it. Just blasting through with a fort save. Your fort save tends to be quite low as a rogue. Your reflex save tends to be quite high. That's in addition to the deck, so the game encourages you to really pump up your certain saves and allow others to atrophy and let other people sort of take the hit command and take
kind of
the hit.
A glass cannon, but a really fast moving glass cannon.
More like a glass M16.
Actually, there's I was thinking about there's stuff in EVE Online. There's different kinds of tanking, and there's one called a speed tank. And the idea is you tank the damage because if somebody's firing at you, they can't hit you, which is effectively like having more hit points, but your hit points are actually being super fast.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what Bertie's doing at the moment. Is his AC is huge. His AC is massive, but he's not actually soaking up lots of damage.
He's got all the AC and all the hit points, and I want some of it. It's not fair.
Yeah, you're going to say that right up until you sneeze and set fire to a building.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
And yeah, for will saves, again, they're fairly standard. But heading into the slightly more interesting things, the thing that obviously defines rogues a lot of the time is the sneak attacks, which is at level 1, you get plus 1d6, at level 3, you get plus 2, at level 5, and basically the odd numbers, you're getting an extra 1. Now what that is that under certain conditions, you are getting extra damage on top of your normal damage. That's really important.
Because precision.
Yes, and that the reason the precision bit's important is criticals do not technically multiply precision damage. It specifically says that, and
it's
to stop. Yeah, it's to stop you rolling 50 d6s on a single crit, which would break the game. So how it is that your criticals, you roll a normal attack, like with and you get the hit and you get a critical or whatever, and then what you're doing is you're maxing out your normal weapon damage, which is one of the reasons it's often better to have a stronger weapon, is that your criticals are more dangerous. So as a rogue, often people will pick more obscure weapons because they have either a bigger crit range or will do more damage. A good example is a kukri. Is it requires you to have specific training in it, and it's just a dagger that has a sort of kink on the end, basically.
I
think they're really cool. But it just makes you slightly better at critting, and there are whole builds made to maximize that. But heading into the other things that are interesting, trap finding.
Yeah.
Is rogue specifically. It allows you to find traps. It allows you to disarm magical traps, and only rogues can do that. Not even like alternatives we'll talk about, like ninjas and things like that.
I mean, we did, I think, in some of the early episodes, that was the couple of times when things began to slow down a bit was when I did that exactly what you'd said earlier, heading off as a rogue to fix traps while everyone else waited behind. But since then, it's been a lot more like, we're going into a place and we've got to kind of check on the fly.
Well,
and that's
a lot
more interesting.
We can talk about this because the episode's already come out.
Yeah.
Is when we went for the Serpentine base and you checked for traps, but we were right on your tail and you were just like one roll ahead of us. So we were all doing it at the same time, really.
That's the trick. And another tip for GMs is to keep the rest of the party engaged. There's nothing like having, if your rogue gets too far ahead trapping, that's fine. Just have something come up to the back of the party and they'll come back. And it just, you can end up with that situation where the people are playing two very different games, and I like to keep it together. Don't get me wrong, splitting the party is hilarious. But having one rogue basically doing a glorified technical analysis of a map whilst everyone else is playing the game, it's not what it was made for, really. Evasion, obviously.
Love that dodging.
Yeah, at second level and higher, a rogue can avoid magical and unusual attacks, basically pretty much all attacks.
And unusual.
We haven't encountered many of them yet, but the classic example is the fireball.
Yeah, but I like the unusual ones more. Like, you know, Billy is attacking you with a very simple sword, but he's doing it in a waggly way. he's dressed
that
as
unusual damage, so he's done it. I can make it right, really.
Yeah, he's dressed as a bumblebee. I can get out of the way for this one.
So a lot of area, basically a lot of area effect attacks. If you make a successful reflex save, you take half damage, unless you're a rogue or similar with the evasion ability, in which case you can dodge the damage completely.
So you backflip out of the way.
Yeah, jump into some kind of extra dimensional.
Yeah, I've I've mentioned that in episodes before. Yeah. I was always told that you sidestep into rogue space,
yeah,
where you just go two-dimensional, the bad thing happens, and then you come back. Which, by the way, is totally not canon, but it's always how I think about it.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a prestige class somewhere that does that.
Heading
ninjas,
on.
I'm sure they're all over it.
Yeah. Things you get to look forward to. Trap sense. So trap sense...
Great, just a vague sense of traps.
No, trap sense is your spider sense. It's great. Here's the things that rogues have great. I think Spider-Man's a rogue, because he gets an awareness to danger, which is summed up in your uncanny dodge, which I'll go into, and the trap sense is...
Trap sense also just gives you big bonuses against trap effects and trap attacks. So when you trigger one, you're like, oh, missed me. Oh, missed me.
Yeah, I've seen this trap before. I know what the score is.
It's really good that we live in a world that so many traps get to.
And like most of the things, the trap sense scales up. So it's plus one, plus two, plus three. Then we get into uncanny dodge.
Ooh.
So this is the really nice one.
Yeah, bring you Lee this one.
So you can't be, if you basically have uncanny dodge, you can't be caught flat-footed. Oh. So even if someone surprises
you... Spidey sense.
It's spidey sense. You still get to react. So and you don't... So obviously being caught flat-footed is bad because you lose your dexterity bonus to your armor. So you can...
Which is just killer for rogues.
Yeah, and you can get sneak attack and stuff like that. But a rogue... with an uncanny dodge, can't be caught flat-footed.
But you do still lose your dex bonus to AC if you've been immobilised, so like tied to the floor, basically, like a tanglefoot bag.
Yep.
And so it's really good for dealing with rogues, a tanglefoot bag.
But also, just so quickly, with the AC of being 17, if you're flat-footed, your AC goes down to 12.
Because you're...
Oh, no, it goes down,
13. Oh, no, 14, because I've now got my lovely armour.
Whereas my AC is 18, and if I'm caught flat-footed, my AC is 18.
Because he's not relying on being quick and nimble and dodging.
I have no dex bonus, so I'm just like a big block of metal.
And here's a fun one for you.
Go on, hit me, go on. Yep.
Improved uncanny dodge, which you get at 8th level. This is where you get the really Spider-Man-y stuff.
Is it like uncanny dodge, but a bit better?
Yep.
Funnily enough...
They know how to name
things. At 8th level onwards, you can't ever be flanked. Which is awesome because you will get yourself in trouble as a rogue.
As we have discussed earlier in Pathfinder, everyone's head is entirely encircled with eyes.
Oh yeah, because you're facing all directions.
You're always facing.
Not just that though. No rogues can ever sneak attack unless they are like significantly stronger than you.
Mm.
So you can't get sneak attacks anymore unless you face a rogue that's more than 4 levels higher than you.
Right.
The number of times that that's going to happen in a game that's balanced and fair...
Something's gone wrong.
Yeah, like, if I'm chucking stuff against you like that, it's because everyone else is in such a position that they can really help you. I never would have you... Like, it'd be 4 of you against... one, and
it
even
would be
then
the campaign boss,
and even then it's very risky as a GM. I'm going to do a session entirely on just GMing tips and stuff. It's really risky to have your whole boss be one person, because what that is one person who, if they actually get the hit, just kill you, and all they will do is they will get the first hit, boom, and then you're down to 3 people and you're at a massive disadvantage, boom, the second person goes, and then they will just, it's like whack-a-mole, they'll just work their way down.
It's like
and
that freaking like Sephiroth in Final Fantasy.
He'll do that.
He just keeps I've got to just Phoenix down all the time.
So the problem is as well, if a player gets a lucky shot off, you're like, my villain's dead. Okay, cool.
We managed to do.
Yeah,
that
did really easy.
Yeah. Do we dare?
I maintain
that
person was super, super awesome, but no one will ever know.
We'll never know. I mean, unless she crops back up.
Well, I don't do returning characters.
And to be,
I'm Byron. Yeah.
And that was your fault, basically, because you got the drop on.
Sorry, just stab people in the back.
Yeah, but that's great because that's what a rogue can do.
And then the last things that we're heading into is the rogue talents. Now, there's a really simple way of explaining this.
But there's lots and they're all complicated.
What it comes down to is one of the ways that they have to balance the rogues out and bulk them up is that they get more feats. And to make it fairer, they have their own feats. So really all a rogue talent is it's kind of feats light, but you get them in addition to all the feats that a normal class would be getting. Yeah. And it's to represent how more versatile they are and how they can be more special.
And they're very much tailored to rogues and the different style of rogues. Yeah. So that, like,
apart from the fact that I can take them, as I did, from alchemists.
Yes, I mean, some of them...
There's a lot of overlaps.
Yeah, so a lot of them allow you to steal abilities from other classes.
Yeah, and just to bulk you out, and it's because people like flavours with rogues. Very few people like to play, I'm a rogue, what do you do? Roguing. They prefer to be like, what are you? Oh, I'm a rogue who really specialises in laying traps people. I'm a rogue who likes bombing people. I'm a rogue who likes dropping from the shadows while screaming ninja and knifing people.
Sasha's just a stabby burglar, really. I looked into seeing if it would actually fit burglar, but there's so many things that they don't have.
Yeah.
That I kind of didn't. I didn't want.
Well, it's a strong addition, honestly. Like, if it's not broken, don't break it.
Well. Oh, God.
And then if you hit level 20, which is every single...
unlikely, given how much he likes explosions.
So every single class has a cap ability, which is meant to be super, super special, amazing. Mm-hmm. And the 20th, whenever you do sneak attack, you can choose either to put the character to sleep for 1d4, paralyzed for 2d6 rounds, or just dead. If you get your sneak attack, they're just dead.
Nice.
And they just have to make a fort save against that. And it's all determined by your abilities. But I'm going to be honest, I don't tend to linger on that because it's really rare that anyone makes it to that level.
Why would you? 3.4 D&D style campaigns are probably best around about level 12 because you can do stuff, but not everything. It's not completely out of control. Because you have to get a wizard.
There are very few game masters, and I don't include myself in this, who can maintain effectively any kind of sense of like a coherent narrative story where the world, where the players aren't just like messing all over it and doing whatever they want for the sake of it. From about 15, it becomes quite hard to wrangle people.
Yeah.
And it's something that I hope to get as a skill, but ultimately I've known very few people who can really keep it together at those levels.
We'll have to do a high level one shot and see how you... We're all playing wizards.
By that time, surely you're the kind of person that is the crime boss.
Oh, yeah.
Like I mean, massive sort of network of things where you can kill someone at 30 paces by blinking.
Well, it's always worth knowing where you want to aim. So, for instance, a face rogue who's pushing the diplomacy thing, yeah, they're the head of the mafia. Mm. And they're the one who goes, I don't like the way that guy looks, and he has an accident at work 2 days later and no one ever suspects a thing, and you're also loaded and blah, blah, blah. Whereas if you're doing the assassin route, you're the one who managed to make it through a castle into a locked steel safe room, killed someone in a way that no one can tell and leave. Like, it's you push to the max.
In the case of a rogue that's into devices and solitary awkwardness, Batman. It's kind of where we're heading here.
And worth mentioning as well, rogues are proficient with all simple weapons and the hand crossbow, so basically a pistol that's a one-shot, really. The rapier, the sap, which is what you use to knock people out non-lethally, the short bow and the short sword, proficient with light armor, not shields. Again, the same with all other classes. You can take feats to get proficiencies and things you don't have. I strongly advise everyone who's listening to avoid doing that very often with rogues, because a lot of the time you can break yourself.
There's very few classes where it's worth spending a feat on learning how to use weapons you don't already know.
Yeah.
Like, we did it for Bertie's build because he had so many feats, and a bastard sword is pretty good. But most...
proving so.
Like, it's just, most of the time, the weapons you already have access to are good enough.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
I think we're going to take a break there, and then we'll come back to it in a couple of minutes, cool. And then we'll head into some wider topics than just, you know, the list. Okay, so we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Test, test. Elias, hopefully if you hear this, it means I've found a way to record those difficult statements I was telling you about. While I hate to speak ill of the dead, the previous archivist left this place in such a dreadful mess, and even an organization with such an unusual focus as the Magnus Institute needs a well-organized archive. As you know, I've been going through trying to digitize and record audio versions, but I've been having trouble with a few of the more bizarre statements. There have been sufficient distortions as to make them utterly unintelligible. Thankfully, though, I managed to unearth this old tape recorder from storage, and these cassettes, archaic as they may be, are still better than nothing. So with that in mind, I thought I'd take it for a spin, as it were. I've taken the shortest of the problem statements, and I'm trying it here. Frankly, I wouldn't normally bother with something so fragmented, but it should be fine as a test. Statement of Jacob, no second name given, regarding God knows what. Original statement given July 15th, 2011. Statement begins. It'll get you too. You can stare all you want, make your notes and your inquiries, but all your beholding will come to nothing. When the time arrives and all is darkness and butchery, you'll wish you had stopped listening and run. Statement ends. Yes, well, you see why I wouldn't have otherwise recorded it. Not exactly something for posterity, but nonetheless, let me know if you are able to hear that correctly, Elias. If so, I think we can begin transcribing the rest of the statements.
The Magnus Archives, a new weekly horror podcast by Rusty Quayle, coming soon.
And welcome back.
Hello. Cool.
So we're now going to be going into some equipment briefly. Now here's one of the fun things I like about rogues. To be really effective, you don't need loads of cash. Yes, you can get a bat cape, which allows you to swoop down from the darkness.
Can and will.
Yeah, but only from darkness.
Well, someone shines a torch at you, you're like, oh no.
Yeah, you just drop like a stone.
Could you imagine Batman at high noon? It looked terrible.
Yeah.
It's not a good look. But the things with rogues is you can benefit from are things like that you're going to laugh. I promise you, you will never look back once you get these. Rogue logs. Rogue logs are great. You just get a big log, okay? And this is an important bit. You gotta carve a face into it and give it a name, right? That's really...
So that when it blows up, you feel bad?
Yeah. So I had Bob the rogue log when I was roguing, and what you do is you roll him down all of those corridors, all those pressure plates, all those motion sensors, all of those trip wires, and you can just walk through. It's a good way to set off a whole load of traps.
Really, I mean, we're in a Victorian level world here. I think they've kind of got the idea that maybe stepping and rolling are different motions for setting off traps.
I think the problem you've got is that you have a GM who really likes roguelogs, so now I'm going to make sure that everything is roguelog proof.
Right, okay.
Well, you've got a trap that's like, oh, I cast Detect Life on you. If I detect life, I'll kill you. Like, is the log alive? The log is not alive.
Yeah.
Maybe I should trap some kind of small animal inside the log.
Well, there is a bag. I don't know if it's a Pathfinder, but in D&D there's a bag you can pull a random animal out of.
Yeah, there is.
And you can just throw like sheep down a corridor. And be like, ah! Okay, I know... There was a campaign, I don't know if it's a campaign that someone told me about, or it's one of those apocryphal stories, but someone had a pit trap, and they just filled it full of donkeys, and then walked over the donkeys.
It's grim. It's a grim solution.
Oh, it's cruel as hell. Yeah,
I was on that Reddit, and there was a thread about the worst kind of combination of class and race and professions and whatever, and I learned about Chicken Wrangler.
Oh yeah, Chicken Wrangler.
So I had a lot of fun with that. Once you get to a high enough level... You've got a random chance when you reach for any item, like a 1 in 2 chance of getting a chicken instead.
Yep. Yep.
What? Chicken.
It's not one of the best ones, but then again, you're heading into in these forums, I also found out the wonderful thing, this is a very common one. Thanks to the way Pathfinder works, the common cat is almost certainly going to kill your standard bog basic human in a fight. Just because of the way the numbers roll, cats are better than people.
I mean, we knew that, but like at fights.
So yeah, it's just one of those weird things.
I don't know. Are you saying you could take a cat in a fight?
I'm saying I could. I'm saying I could if I had a 10-foot pole. Oh, flawless segue. So
no.
Not a flawless segue.
10-foot poles are useless because all they do is encourage trap builders to build 11-foot traps. I've explained this before.
It becomes a length race.
Yeah, yes. Again, the 10-foot pole, it's literally what it sounds like. It's
a
10-foot pole.
What you do with
and
it.
You use it for poking things without hurting anyone.
That's what we like.
What I like is a trap builder who just builds traps with activation triggers 10 foot behind the trap. So they poke it and then just a rock falls.
It's
on
a thing. It's a thing already.
I am glad of this.
But those are your two like cheap, really bog basic, will drive your GM spare. If you're an aspiring rogue with a GM who's only just getting started, it'll drive them nuts. Yeah. Obviously, you want to get into thieves' tools and get them masterwork as soon as possible, because if you're picking a lock without thieves' tools, you're taking a penalty. If you're picking a lock with thieves' tools, but they're not masterwork, you basically negate that penalty, but you're still just meh. With masterwork, you're actually getting bonuses for it. Right. And thieves' tools are really, really useful. Anecdotally, things I've used thieves' tools are picking locks, yeah, all right. Performing surgery, fixing cars. Thieves' tools are pretty much the versatile. Yeah, you can probably use that for that tool. And they're pretty fun. Other things that you're going to be wanting to look into, a lot of one-shot things. You'll notice that Sasha's been stocking up on Tanglefoot bags and flame vials, things like that. They're pretty good for that, especially at later levels for magic devices. So wands. Wands are a rogue's friend. It's charisma-based, but rogues should think about pumping into use magic device. At the lower levels, it tends to be one of those things that you start taking later, where in one level, rather than spreading your points out, you just get really good at it.
Well, it's one of those things where if there's a sorcerer in the party, sorcerers tend to be better at it. But if there was a wizard instead of a sorcerer, you might well want to take...
And it's always worth more than one person being able to use it, because there's nothing like someone having an incredibly powerful thing that blows up in their face because they're an idiot, and then no one else can use the incredibly powerful game-winning thing because no one bothered to use magic device.
Or having a wand of heal wounds of any level, and then the person with the wand who can use the wand goes down, and people are running around with the wand going, I can't, do you poke them with it?
Up the nose!
Can't you automatically use a wand if it's a spell you can already cast or something? Or is that a rule from a previous edition?
Well, even if that is, it means that there's already a heal caster running around, so you don't need it.
Yeah.
So, anything else that other people would recommend, anecdotally from equipment? Obviously, I would always say rope. As much rope as you can carry.
Yep.
I recommend spider silk because it is lighter, stronger, and just better. Mm. Although there are certain things...
Well, once you've got a bag of holding, it doesn't matter too much.
Sure, which is obviously worth it. I'd recommend getting your handy haversack as soon as possible.
I was looking at like the rope of climbing and the rope of knots.
Oh, yeah,
rope of knots automatically can make ladders. Like, you just throw it up at things, and it's like, that's awesome. Nothing there. Yeah.
And grappling hooks.
Grappling hooks, they're always solid.
We should get some handcuffs. We keep needing to restrain people.
Yeah, handcuffs are really good. Rope, the problem with rope is you tie someone up and then you've lost your rope. Handcuffs are deliberately fairly cheap, but I would also say is don't forget to get a lock with them. A lot of people don't, and then there's just they don't automatically have the locks in. And quality of locks is it's this weird thing where they're all useless up to something like the rankings are up to things like excellent. And the second you hit excellent, almost no one can get into it. But up to that point, any rogue worth their salt can. It's this weird jump.
See, this is the problem with living in a world that doesn't have cable ties. As soon as you have cable ties, you just zip, right, you're not getting out of that.
Remind me to show you after the recording, I found out how to get out of cable ties.
Does it cut your own hands off?
It's not.
Yes.
Funnily
actually, can I quickly segue into one of my favourite rules, which incorporation is a sci-fi cyberpunk game.
Go, go, go.
They have a nanowire handcuffs, which are impossible to get out of, but if you break out of them, you have to roll and you lose 1d2 hands.
Oh.
So it's basically just, you can just break out of them, but you lose 1d2 hands.
I love that it's a dice roll.
That's what makes it the best
Why would you be giving me these ideas anyway?
It's because that agents grow back like starfish, they don't care.
Sure.
Adventurers do.
I'm trying to think, other useful equipment. Disguise kit's always good.
I'm loving that. I was also looking at the Hat of Disguises.
Hat of Disguise is a useful one.
Particularly with Sasha's recent roles in Disguises. Yeah. Where it's just like, you've made yourself look more like yourself.
Also, especially for your build, you get that belt of returning weapons.
Yes.
You put something in the sheath, and when you throw it, next to it, it's just back in your sheath.
I mean, for any character in any game of Pathfinder, magic armor, magic weapons. I know it's boring, but...
Okay,
you'll die.
Just so useful.
Yep. So let's head in then to some tactics. Lydia has said this before, and it's a really good way of putting it, which is rogues are the combat as puzzle. Tell you what, you explain it better than me anyway, so go for it.
Well, it's how I always play any kind of computer game. From everything from Baldur's Gate onwards, has been that I like playing things as like, okay, so here is the room, sort of like a chessboard. I need to get to that place. I need to stab that way. I need to like sneak around here.
So you're like XCOM then?
I don't know.
You're probably like XCOM.
Right. I mean, it's what I like in card games. It's what I like in board games. It's sort of things about manoeuvring as opposed to the kind of, you know, in the way that Bertie fights, which is like slash, bang. And he sort of quite enjoys sort of flaring up around that one action.
I walk up to the thing. I hit the thing. The thing falls over. Excellent.
Yeah. And I just don't see the attraction. I mean, I understand that it must be fun, but it's always about the puzzle. But the unfortunate thing is that does come with a lot of numbers.
So we discussed this at character creation, which is why we went with the rogue, is that yes, there's a lot more mass to it, but it's very much what you're after.
Yeah.
And what it is the puzzle here is that the rogue is amazing in a couple of really specific situations. How do you make those situations happen? Yeah. And the better you get at manipulating people, and I don't just mean manipulating in the sense of like, oh, I roll a dice to manipulate them. I mean stuff like fainting. So it'd be things like luring them out, making them think you're a treat, only to double back once your party have looped around, like really like getting into the tactics and nitty gritty of it.
Yeah.
But the scenario that you need is anything that will grant you sneak attack.
Yeah.
And that is specifically, you're looking for things that deny them dex bonuses.
Yeah.
So catching them flat footed. The best one is always just getting the first attack in before they know you're there.
And the existence of like Bertie and Zolf as big, heavy, armoured things that take some of the hits and I run up behind, because both of them are massive and tough but kind of slow. So
I'm gonna have both of them have armor that yells I'm a target whenever they're running around.
Good morning.
Hello.
Whereas mine is just sort of whispering over there, there's a distraction.
So
the rogue tends to be squishy and sad when isolated. And, I mean, there was sort of one fight where you got isolated on your own and you became ineffective, basically. But when you're fighting in a team, and that's one of the things I really like about rogues, is they encourage teamwork. Because so much of, talking about getting the sneak attack, obviously surprise is one, but flanking is the other main one.
Yeah.
There's been a whole load of times where Zolf's been brought in to kind of, like you came in to essentially reorder the fight so that I was then able to flank, because they were getting me face on.
I'm just standing there going, hello, yeah, I'm here, I've got a big stick.
So getting into the maths of it and how it relates to the tactics, by the way.
Yeah.
When you score a critical hit, it does not apply to precision damage. It only applies to the weapon damage.
which right now is a d4, so...
Yeah, which right now is a d4, so there's
d4
not a lot
minus
to
one.
Yay! Oh. Ranged attacks can counter sneak attacks, yeah, but only if the target's within 30 feet. But there are items you can get to mitigate this, so like sniper goggles, things like that, which are specifically designed if you want to play that sniper build, yeah, which, by the way, I've played before. It's really hard at lower levels. If you want to jump in at like level 7, level 10... go for it. Before there's, then, it's really difficult.
Like, what with having my bombs and the thing about thrown weapons as an option, I'm going to need to dump some stats into something about throwing soon, but I think right now stabbing is more fun.
And you can deal non-lethal instead of lethal damage, but you can't...
I don't like to.
You can't use a weapon that deals lethal damage to deal non-lethal damage in a sneak attack, because if it's precision, the idea of you hitting with the flat of a blade, but precisely, like, it just doesn't gel. You also can't do sneak attack damage on a thing with concealment. The idea is, if it's concealed, how can you know where its juicy bits are? That's the logic, as it were.
Like the bits that glow in pulsating blue in the box.
It's when you go into your X-ray Batman vision and you're like, aim here.
Yeah.
So there's different ways to maximise a rogue's sort of damage output. So the path we took for Sasha was to take two weapon fighting. Mm. And the idea is that as often as possible, you'll get two attacks, potentially. Now, it does make the individual attacks slightly less powerful, in that you're, you know, instead of getting a +4 bonus to hit, you're only getting a +2 bonus to hit at your current level. Mm-hmm. But two attacks and two potential chances to activate sneak attack damage, when sneak attack damage is so good compared to sort of what the rest of us are doing.
It's the risk-reward payoff, and the maths plays out that getting the extra attacks is a really good way of doing it. It's worth noting as well that sneak attacks are where you have the advantage. So part of that is, if you have the advantage, you are more likely to hit. So the thing that people forget as well with rogues is that once you're set up in that scenario, you dominate hard because the other person's at a disadvantage and you're getting a bonus for them being at a disadvantage, which means that when you're getting multiple hits, that just stacks higher and higher and higher.
I mean, that also makes it just more fun to play, in that there's been quite a few times where I've got myself right into the position and I've been very happy and then rolled the things and then you get, like, nothing. And then other ones where I kind of got everything and knocked out someone much, much bigger than me, much faster. Yeah. So it's like, it's a nice high stakes thing.
I'd say, I mean, certainly you have done the highest, like, level above you takedown so far. I mean, this isn't a spoiler because if people are listening this far, they've listened to it previously. But when you take out the, that caster, I chucked you a bone by knocking him prone. Nice poem there. But honestly, like, you were playing it very, very well, and that's something that other characters wouldn't be able to do. Honestly, Bertie will just square up to someone and he'll just whack him. Yeah. Hamid, again, will be more useful at, like...
Hamid is not accomplishing much right now.
It's because it's early levels.
He's still only got first level spells.
But that's the trade-off, is that...
They are rubbish, aren't they?
Yeah.
But you're both going to come into your own.
Oh, yes, very much so.
To be honest, my own is having a trident. You know.
So it's worth spelling out.
Zolf gets a lot done, and Hamid provides the heart.
Hamid definitely is the heart of the team.
Oh, and the vomiting definitely. And the crying of the team.
That's because he's emotional.
Yeah, the rest of us are sort of hardened.
So, Bryn, I reckon you want to take the lead on this one. Could you walk us through now a standard attack for Sasha, assuming that everything's set up the way it should be? What should you be rolling? How should you be doing it?
It's been on, it's come over and over,
and a lot of people are asking, and we need to pin it down, and you're the guy to do it.
So... the first thing is does she get to do one attack or two attacks? So she's currently level 2 as we're recording this. So if she gets one attack, she gets a +4 bonus on the d20 roll. If she's taking two attacks, she gets two d20 rolls and each get a +2 bonus.
And the way that determines whether she gets one or two is whether she's in position. If she's having to move into position, she only gets the one. If she's in position and ready to go, she gets both.
Absolutely.
Even if that's not a sneak attack, if she's in position and doesn't have to move to do it, she gets both. That's called a full attack. It's the difference between an attack and a full attack. This is going to be a big deal later on, because you know how other people get multiple attacks? They get the full attack. So a full attack action is where you don't have to move, you just wail on a thing.
Yeah, you can potentially attack many times.
Yep. You get your full 6 seconds to just...
So from stabby stab to stab, 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 stabby stab, stab.
That's the one.
Yeah. McStab, stab.
So obviously, in the ideal scenario... Stab. Sasha is also flanking, so is getting a further +2 to those attack rolls.
Hooray, stab.
Now, if she hits, the individual dagger is not great at doing damage. It's a d4 base, and Sasha's strength modifier means she's doing d4
minus she's only got
minus one.
Well, she's only got 8 strength.
Yeah, so this is what I was saying before. It's rogues don't need strength very much, but it can really impact their damage output. And so it's one of those ones, and it's really hard to build a rogue who has good stats everywhere, which is kind of what you want.
Yeah. Mm.
And obviously climb for a lot of rogues can be a big skill. That's based on strength too. But I think that Sasha's build is really interesting and the strength penalty hasn't been too big a problem.
No, I mean, I could have done more damage with some of those stabs. Yeah. But once you get some it's magic
gonna get,
daggers...
Yes, it's going to get better very
so
quickly.
So let's say that Sasha's taken both attacks. She was in position and she's taken those attacks. So she's getting the 1d4 for each of the daggers and then...
So if she's also flanking, say, then she's getting an additional d6 plus one.
Yep.
So a d4 and a d6 with a net plus zero is a pretty good attack at this level.
And where's that and plus one coming from?
So the plus one is a trait that she took right at the beginning when we first made her character called Dirty Fighting.
Yeah.
Now, d4 plus d6 is a pretty good attack at this level, and it's going to go up very fast. So I think a lot of our characters are going to get significantly better when we hit third level. And that's
we'll
the first
feet,
time
we?
That's the first time you really see a power jump based on first to second is not a big difference, whereas first to third is quite a big difference.
Sure.
And we're all going to look much more impressive after it.
No.
So potentially, with two attacks, if Sasha is flanking, both d20 rolls would have plus four to hit. Each one that hit would do d4 plus d6 damage, which is... a lot in effectively a single
round.
But
hang on, she critted and confirmed both, by which I mean she got an, I can't remember her crit range, 19, 20, something like that. Let's say that she rolled a 19 and then rolled again and it was a hit, so she confirmed it, and she rolled a 19, she confirmed. What happens then, Bryn?
Oh, all the damage. The person just dies instantly. no, you don't get to double sneak attack damage, which always makes me very sad.
Yes.
So only you would roll... additional d4s, basically.
And depending on, there's a very common house rule, which is people will say that the damage rolls over for crit, so if you get a 19 and then roll another 19, you get another, and another 19, you get another.
I don't like that rule.
You can end up with the problem of, again, it's the same as having one big boss, is you end up being annihilated or annihilating in a single turn, which sounds great, but it makes balancing the game really difficult.
But, I mean, there's also, it's a way of balancing different weapons. Like, most weapons have a double... crit, but a few really interesting weapons have a triple crit.
Yeah.
Which I really like, and it makes them different choices. And I think there's one or two weapons in the game which have a quad crit. One of my favourites, I can't remember if it's in this system or a different one, is the scythe, which has a quad crit.
But it's a
modifier. What's a quad crit mean?
So if you crit, you get to roll, instead of 1d4, you get to roll 2d4, because it's a double. If it was a triple, you get to roll 3d4.
Oh, right, okay.
A quad crit would be rolling, for your weapon, 4d4.
For instance.
So a scythe is not a very good weapon, except if you hit them just right, you do a horrendous amount of damage.
It basically means, if it's usually really awkward, but when you get around their neck and pull, their head pops off.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
It's one of my favourite things about the scythe. It's useless except when it crits.
Because, I mean, thinking back, so the first character I ever played in a tabletop game was a rogue. And honestly... I didn't know what I was doing. I was playing with some brilliant people who just walked me through it. But I ended up, they helped me, and they were a little bit of a munchkin lot. Not very hard, but they liked the numbers. And I ended up playing something, and it was, long story short, it was built to take advantage of crits.
Yeah.
So eventually, it was, everything was going into crits. So pretty much every attack I did, and the reason for that was that GM adamantly said, no, crits roll. So they roll over.
Yeah.
And everyone went, well, it's a way to make the rogue work. So we ended up...
There also used to be a lot of ways to expand the crit range.
Which is what we were doing.
In one of the updates, they reduced the number of ways. You used to be able to, without too much difficulty, expand the crit range so anything a 12 or above threatened the crit.
Because there are a couple that doubled.
Whereas these days you can, it's very hard to get your crit range past 16.
Because mine was, as standard, it was something like 14 or 15.
Yeah.
And also I had a way to get extra minimum damage and things like that. So it was effectively like one out of every three times I was swinging, I was killing the thing.
Yeah.
But the flip side is this is one of the reasons that I've been sort of trying to walk you through the roguing thing a bit, is I died 9 times in that campaign. And how it worked was we had a good friend of mine who was playing a druid who can bring people back, but they don't come back the same.
Yes.
You roll a random dice and like there's a 20-30% chance that you're just the same. And all the rest of all the other races with 100, which is something I got once, is what's the worst race you could pick for the character? So this creature that I played...
Like an ogre race.
I had gone through... I probably can't remember in order, but it was something like... I went human male, human female, bugbear, which is an incredibly stinky, short creature, kobold. I then went via something I can't even remember anymore, something incredibly obscure that the GM picked, and then eventually made it back to human at the very, very end of the campaign via some other things, where we just agreed that we'd Google image the word man, and the first image that pops up was what it looked like. Christian Bale. It was a lucky save, but given the fact that I was also playing a Batman character,
nice.
The Works. Scarlet Avenger, the worst name, but it was deliberate, it was ironic, you see, because I was really cool, I was at uni, so it was really cool.
Ah, nice.
Yeah,
it's a very 19-year-old name.
So yeah, very much.
In a long-running campaign I had, a friend of mine had a very interesting rogue build where he had a couple of levels in fighter as well, and he maximised two things about his rogue. So he was playing a social rogue. He had high charisma, and he took all the social skills. Mm-hmm. And he absolutely ignored everything stealthy and trap-based. And he had big armour and a big sword, and he looked like a fighter. And what he did is he found a way to maximise the ability to feint, which is a combat move, which comes off your bluff check. And if you succeed at your bluff check, you automatically get a sneak attack. I don't think it's necessary or good for Lydia's build, but it's a different way to go. And that was, as I said, was a very social rogue character, and he ignored all the trap stuff. And I think, you know, he built that character to be good in two situations, fighting and talking. But there are other situations which Sasha is good in, investigating and exploring. And I think that's more interesting for the current.
Sure.
Although the thing is, with the amount of skill points you get, and the fact that your charisma is only at minus one, so you put in a couple of ranks, and suddenly your bluff check's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, once you're hitting level five, you're getting right a minus now it's already one. That's all.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing; it's not terrible. So, last thing to consider is backstories for rogues. Is we were discussing it a bit, like heading in towards mob bosses or assassins and things like that. And it's very easy to come up with something fairly bland for a rogue, which the bland ones tend to be. Oh, I'm not really a criminal, I've been framed but have to be a criminal, which is, that'd been done a lot. And the other one is that, you know, stone cold, evil killer, which is fine up until the entire party go, no, we don't want to kill the people, we want to be nice. And then that doesn't fly. So it's always...
Yes, Poseidon.
Hey, I have a legitimate reason. A big man is telling me to do it.
A big man in the sky with a big beard is going, rah, 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 except... I kind of get it. I mean, in this world, he can squash you.
Oh, no, there's literally a big man who lets him heal people.
But you were saying, Lydia.
I wasn't, but I can. I can do that thing with my words. I mean, I thought that it would be interesting to do a sort of Oliver Twisty type thing. And
I never saw that, and that absolutely makes sense.
It really is. It's, like, it's essentially, she's not Oliver Twist because she's one of the, like, you know, the other Fagin, like an artful dodger, but like not artful.
The incompetent dodger.
Not incompetent, but just like...
The awkward dodger.
The awkward dodger, yeah.
There you go.
It would have been, I think, quite easy to sort of do her as a face character that's just like, I've lived in Lower London and Upper London and, you know, I've swung my way through these really cool things. But like, I like the idea of someone that has these skills and quite enjoys doing them, and that's what she's good at, but is still kind of morally completely neutral. Like,
sure.
You know, that hasn't necessarily become a burglar because she just likes
the
things. I don't know. I mean, she is quite a neutral. She's a bit of a blank slate, but I kind of like that.
Well, it's an intentional slate.
Yeah, I quite liked the idea of having someone that was very awkward and a bit ignorant because, frankly, I don't know much about the system. And it's quite fun to have someone that can ask questions about the world, but to have someone that knows about kind of the dark and the underworld, but not in a kind of cool, like, hey, I'm Gambit, like, sure. Bonjour, hello, look at my cards, mon card.
Interestingly, I'd say that Sasha's backstory was probably in more depth than everyone else's. I won't go into it here because, you know, that's the point of the campaign, among other things. Tips for people who are building a rogue backstory: I would make sure you have a really good reason to stick with the group. You can discover it like early on, but make sure you have a reason, because the thing with rogues is that everyone always wants to say with the rogue,
I'm the lone wolf,
so I go now. And it's fine if they're willing to re-roll a character every week and everyone's willing to put up with that, but honestly no one is. So find a reason to stay with the group, and if you don't want to play like with the group, play a computer game, because that's kind of the point, is playing with the group. And similarly, you're going to want to make sure that you tie in with the point of your group, as in, Are they good? Are they trying to uphold the law?
I think that's really
important. Are they trying to bring it down?
Not just for rogues, but for any, is to build a group that want to stay together.
Yep.
Because it's just, it helps have a good game, it helps have a good story.
Obviously, this is for new people. Like, when you have a group of people you know, obviously play with the rules, you can have some really interesting stuff with groups which roll up against each other ethically and morally. But yeah, for starting out, or if it's your first game.
Well, you can have intergroup conflict without it splitting things.
Well, we've done that before. But I think rogues lend themselves most to those kind of problems, is because people still have that kind of thief mentality of, I'm a thief, therefore I am bad.
Well, they're literally the rogue. They are the morally ambiguous class.
Sure.
Yeah, like, and we entered the story with her fleeing from an active threat, whereas I think most other people, it wasn't quite a kind of flee in terror scenario. So she comes in and is, you know, the people in the group happen to kind of have her back and rescue her, and it seems like the safest choice at the time. But, you know, I think the idea of not being entirely certain she wants to stick around was relevant for a while, but then it's been quite nice to have some conversations where it's just like, actually, no, these people are... She's quite enjoying the company, and it's nice to have friends for just about the first time and have motivations to stick together. So I think that kind of tension is an interesting thing to play off against.
I agree. And the only thing that I would say, avoid at all costs, this isn't for Lydia, it's for everyone else, loot is not a shared motivation. It will only stretch you so far.
Yeah.
Please.
Except for Bertie, who... It's, loves
yeah, but he managed to make the most complicated way of searching for loot ever with so much baggage. Yeah, I think that's pretty good. I think we've covered everything that we need to there. Yeah. And I think we've gone into a nice amount of depth. Once we get a moment in between all the other stuff we're doing, we'll do some...
We can always discuss it further on the forum.
Yes. Oh, yeah, do hit up.
And tweet at us.
Or send us an email.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So what's the Twitter handle?
The Twitter handle is at the Rusty Quill. And if you send questions and comments and things via that...
And if you drop us a line via mail at rustyquill.com, we will always reply.
Yay.
And, of course, we've got the forums, which are still mainly run by our good friend Bryn over here, who's doing a...
Yep.
Banking job.
I post all the time and no one else does, and I'm so lonely.
That's not true. You know, that's not true.
Sasha loves Twitter because the character limit means that her awkwardness kind of is hidden. She's found a new life tweeting pictures.
Thanks again for listening as always, and we look forward to putting out more content for you and hearing from you really soon.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by RustyQuill.com and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial International License. Today's episode was recorded and produced by Alexander J. Newell. To comment on episodes, make donations, and view links, images, videos, and show notes, visit RustyQuill.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Tweet us on Twitter at TheRustyQuill or email us at mail@RustyQuill.com. Thanks for listening.
Looking at like the rop. You say tomato, I say rop.
I feel like saying you say tomato, I say tomat.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, everyone. It's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola, and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe period, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun, and see you later.